Good. Well, I'm going to invite Simon to come forward. Simon, I gladly met last week at a Kids Hope gathering, and I thought, I don't know what's this guy going to be like? Anyway, I learned that Simon has been involved in ministry for quite some years, a number of church ministries, pastoral ministry, engaged in the challenges that brings, mm-hmm. and I know all about that, Simon. Mm-hmm. So you've had lots of people praying for you, obviously.
Absolutely.
Like me. And it was delightful to meet you at the Kids Hope program, the mentors gathering that we had, and just to see some of the passion in your heart. I hope that passion just flows out over all of us today.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. So good to be with you today. Thank you so much for inviting me. I don't take it lightly. As someone who led a local church for a number of years, I was always quite cautious with who I gave access to the platform. So thank you very much for trusting me in this space. Michael and Kerry, thanks for having me. It was lovely to meet you. Thanks for your investment and input into the community, not just in this local church or Kids Hope, but beyond that, the things that are seen and unseen. Linda, 20 years. Where are you? 20 years, that's unbelievable. I remember 20 years ago. It feels like yesterday, but gee whiz, there's a lot that's happened in that time. Sue and Josie, thank you so much for being present today. And thank you so much for your investment in the Kids Hope program and the kids. It makes such a difference. And to hear 72 kids over that 20-year period, that's unbelievable, isn't it? 72 young lives that have been transformed. But we did some maths and worked out that on average, for every child, there's between 8 to 12 intimate relationships that they have. 8 to 12 people that have seen the life transformation in those children. 8 to 12 people who have recognised a child who was struggling and not talking and then becoming the school captain, if I understood correctly, and being able to share at the end of the year. That's 864 lives that have been impacted directly because of those mentored children. That's not to mention the lives that are impacted beyond that as well. That young boy who was a school captain went to high school. He may have his own family now. How is his life different because of the transformation that happened in that moment? Unbelievable. So thank you for your investment over that 20 years. One of the things I love to do when I speak to a new community is just share a bit about my family. So I've got a photo of my family that will come up on the screen. We've got Jill, my wife, next to me there. We've been married for 31 years. People say she would have got less for murder, and maybe so, but she still sticks by me. She's a practice manager for a plastic surgeon. In the middle, there's Bailey in the pink jacket. He's an electrician. He's now 27 years old. Isabel in the middle is 25. She's a chiropractor. And just graduated the end of last year, spent the first 6 months up at Swan Hill at our friend's chiropractic clinic, and has come back to Melbourne now, living with us with her dog Maisie. So I'm a grandfather for a puppy. Her name's Maisie. She's a Groodle and she's insane. And Geordie on the left-hand side, he's 22. He's engaged to be married to the beautiful Shay. They'll get married March next year. I probably should know that. And he's just got himself as a job as a commercial real estate agent, but he's Mr. Entrepreneur. So like when he was 19, he's like, Dad, I've got an idea. I'm going to import an inflatable nightclub from China, make a business out of it and rent it out like they do jumping castles. And I went, go for it. So he did. Made his money, sold the business, and now he's doing commercial real estate. So it's quite unbelievable. I'm very privileged to be able to be called their dad. And quite frankly, as someone who's been in ministry for a long time, that's my retirement plan. Because, you know, you've got an electrician, they do well for themselves, chiropractors and entrepreneurs. Between one of the three of them, they will cover Jill and I in our retirement. Because I've been in ministry for a while, it doesn't pay that well, so that's the plan. You know, I come here to speak to you about Kids Hope today, and Kids Hope has been, as we've already heard, in Australia for around just over 20 years. 2004 it came to Australia by World Vision. It's become its own entity around 11 years ago. And in that time, there's been such transformation in lives. You know, the need is great and it's only growing. We found that there's been a 45% increase in child social anxiety disorders. 1 in 10 kids now experience mental health disorders. 3/4 of children with clinical anxiety do not get the care that they need. School avoidance is on the rise now more than ever. And over the years, especially post-COVID, we've seen a massive rise in kids' mental health needs. The needs are not shrinking, they're growing. And to date, Kids Hope has seen over 30,000 mentoring relationships across the country. That's one mentor, one child for a year. That's how we measure it. We don't keep track of the children. That's a child protection thing. We keep track of the mentors. And over the last 30-odd years, it's about 30,064 or something like that, but over 30,000 mentoring relationships. Right now, we serve around 195 schools across the country. We're working with about 205 churches. There's just under 900 children mentored. And the need is growing and growing. We have 76 schools on our waiting list. 76 schools who have reached out to us unsolicited. We are yet to advertise to say, can we please have Kids Hope? The needs are so great. And the schools do everything they can. But the wellbeing need is often beyond the capacity of what a school can finance. It's often beyond the capacity of what the classroom teachers can carry. So with Kids Hope, we come alongside to serve and to support, to spend an hour a week with a child facing vulnerability. And our desire is to see Kids Hope available for every Aussie kid that needs it. That's the goal that drives us. That's the thing that keeps us moving forward. Today we're going to spend a little bit of time looking at a passage from James's letter to the church. We've heard it already this morning. And we're going to spend a little bit of time just expanding on that and looking at what he was saying to the original readers. Now, we know James was writing to Jewish Christians. It actually says that at the start. And this Jewish group of Jewish Christians were actually scattered amongst the nations. Again, it says to the 12 tribes scattered amongst the nations. This happened after the martyrdom of Stephen. Stephen was one of their leaders. And we read about this in Acts chapter 6, verse 7. Stephen was stoned for believing what they believed to the point of death. It'd be quite confronting, wouldn't it? Being stoned, you're seeing your leader stoned to death for believing what you believed. Now, it was written by James. It's the pretty common belief that James, the writer of this book, was the brother of Jesus. And one writer describes it this way. As a leader of the Jerusalem church, James wrote as a pastor to instruct and encourage his dispersed people in the face of their difficulties. Now, we know they were facing trials and tribulations. We know life was not easy for this group of people. And it makes sense because they were in a new country. They were no longer in their local community. You see, this community had had significant transformation a couple of times. Because they were living in the Jewish communities. They were living with people who were just like them. They had the same beliefs. They had the same structures. They did the same rituals. They did all of the same things. They knew that there was these 600 plus laws that we did our best to try and follow. They knew that there were certain sacrifices that we all did together for certain reasons across our community. They knew there was festivals that we all gathered and we followed through together. And we did all of these things to make sure that we were right before God. And then this guy Jesus comes along. And he changes everything. You know, Jesus lived the perfect life. He claimed to be God himself, his son. He died on the cross and he rose again for the forgiveness of our sins. And this group of people went, oh my goodness, Jesus is God. Our life is transformed. All these rules and rituals we needed to do to make ourselves right before God are no longer necessary because Jesus came. And we're invited to follow him, to accept him, to follow his teachings. And this group of people found themselves separate to their own community. Could you imagine what that might be like? You know, John next door is heading down to the synagogue to do the rituals that you once did. And you're sitting here going, John, I get it, but you don't need to do that anymore. Because of Jesus, that's not necessary anymore. And then your leader gets stoned in front of you for believing just what you believe. And now this group of people were dispersed across the known world. They got out of there, as you might, as you would. We see refugees coming to Australia because of the persecution in their own lands. And this group of people who once were just like everyone else, had already had one cultural transition, are now finding themselves in an even more cultural transition. They're in a new place with new people, with new rituals, new ways of doing things. And James is writing to this group of people saying, remember who you are. Remember whose you are. And we can read it and go, surely, but surely they would remember that they were followers of Jesus, but they were in this new land and all these different things were happening, these different rituals, different ways of being. And we can look at that and read of a text from thousands of years ago and go, you're crazy, but it happens to us today. Have you ever started a new job? Have you ever started a new job? So you go to the new job, right? And you walk through the door and they show you where your desk is or your place of work, and you're kind of observing what's happening around you. And all of a sudden at about 9:48, people start to murmur, and then about 10 o'clock they get up and everyone goes to the tea room. And you're sitting there going, I guess everyone's going to the tea room. And you have morning tea. And you go, okay, here's the cultural thing of the community that I now find myself in. Give it a week or two and all of a sudden about 9:48 you're murmuring. And you're about ready to stand up and go to the morning tea room. You know, years ago, I took my family to Adelaide when Bailey was only like 2 years old. We lived there for 18 months. Now, I can say this because I have South Australian heritage, but they speak funny. Like, have you ever taken notice of the accent of a South Australian? Yeah? They say weird things like castle instead of castle. Branch instead of branch. Yeah, here we go. So am I. Like, I'm the only Victorian in my family, but I can bag him out. So it was, I remember the moment when Bailey comes home and he's talking about next year he's going to go to kindy. I went, that's it. It's kinder. It's kinder. Not kindy, it's kinder. We're going back to Melbourne. Because I wasn't willing to risk the family heritage of my line to have a weird accent for the rest of their life. I've had the privilege of many times going to India for 20 odd years since, and I've gone there many, many times, and I love India. I love the people. I love the culture. Oh man, I love the food. I love the food. The problem is I've spent a lot of time there. So when I come home from India, I've got a few Indian traits and I can't help it. And I start to use language like the locals would, respond. You go, which is yes, oftentimes. And I'm, yes. And then we go to an Indian restaurant. My kids are like, Dad, don't, because they can see it coming, because they know the culture that I've been hanging out in, and they know that I'm going to start acting like the community that I love and cherish, and I'm going to become like the people. So I'm sitting with the person at the restaurant, and he's offering me the butter chicken. I'm going, And my kids are going, Dad, you're embarrassing me. When I started at Kids Hope, one of our team members, Amrita, has recently come to Australia probably like 5 or 6 years ago, and I had to sit down with her early and I had to say, Amrita, I've spent a lot of time in India and I love India and I love people and I love the food and you've got an Indian accent. So if my head starts wobbling when I'm talking to you, please know it's out of love and reverence and not anything else. And she had a little chuckle about it and I had a little chuckle and I still wobble my head today because you can't become who you hang out like with, right? You become like the culture that you find yourself immersed in. Whether you choose to or not, you can easily become like the culture that you find yourself in. That's exactly who James was talking to. That was exactly the challenge that he was encouraging the followers of Jesus to be mindful of. Because we naturally become like the culture that we're immersed in. And the cultures they were immersed in was problematic with the ways of Jesus. So in James 1:26-27, knowing that context, let's read this verse again. Those who consider themselves religious, yet do not keep a tight rein on their tongue, deceive themselves, and their religion is worthless. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after the orphans and the widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. Now, this verse is actually kind of setting up the rest of the book. If you do the research on it, you'll find that this verse kind of like is like, the introduction that expands the rest of the book. And in my Bible anyway, you read through the NIV study Bible and the headlines, you hear things like favoritism forbidden, faith and deeds, taming the tongue, two kinds of wisdom, submit yourself to God and so on. So we're going to spend a little bit more time just breaking this down and understanding what James was trying to say to this displaced people group. Those who consider themselves religious and do not keep a tight rein on their tongue deceive themselves, and their religion is worthless. Important to note, the two words that are translated into religion here are actually two different foundational words. One of the words talks about the idea of reverence of God. You may have heard the term fear of God before. This idea that this amazing, overwhelming creator God who created everything, the moon, the stars, the seas, who created you, who created humanity, who created the world around us, who creates the weather that we get to experience. This amazing, overwhelming God who could say, Simon, I'm bored with you, flick, you're done. The idea here that this first part of religion is this overwhelming nature of how big and amazing God is, and a reverence to that, recognizing who we are in comparison to him. And the second word, religion, the second word, it comes from more of a framework of how we respond to that. You know, in modern vernacular, we'd call it worship. And that's not just the singing, it's how we live our life and how we engage with other people and how we respond to this amazing creator God. This big, amazing God, and how we choose to respond. Our actions, our thoughts, the way we process life. James is referring to a heart posture outworked by a changed life. This idea of how big and amazing God is and how privileged we are to know him will drive and motivate how we respond. One writer says this: religion is the external manifestation of spirituality, a relationship to God rooted in the heart and shaping of one's life. God in us, revealed through our actions. James goes on, those who consider themselves religious and do not keep a tight rein on their tongue deceive themselves, and their religion is worthless. One translation uses language like unbridled. If you read through the book a little more, James will talk about the power of the bit in a horse's mouth, this small bit in a horse's mouth that can turn the whole horse. He'll talk about the small rudder on the back of a ship that can turn the whole ship. The power of our tongue is so very, very significant because it reveals what's going on inside of us. When we talk, it's a reflection of what's happening in here. If we truly respond to God at our worship and reverence, our actions and our words would be in response to that. What we say reveals who we are on the inside, which is pertinent to all of us. He then goes on in verse 27. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after the orphans and the widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. Now, in the ancient Near East, widows and orphans had a very different experience to how they might here in Australia. There was no Centrelink. There was no government bodies to take in and support widows and orphans. In fact, it was believed in that time, if you're a widow or an orphan, you probably did something wrong, so you probably deserve it. You'll notice he says not if they're distressed, he says in their distress. Because to be a widow or an orphan in that time, you were in distress. Your life was challenging. You may not know where your next bit of food's coming from. You may not have a place to sleep. And James is saying, if you want to really represent to the world that you're a follower of Jesus because of what's going on, because of amazing how amazing God is and what's going on in your heart, take care of the widows and orphans. And they did. They would adopt these people into their families. They would show them love, respect, admiration. If you want to do some more research, research the word orphan in the Bible and you'll see what it means. You know, when Paul talks about being adopted into sonship, through Christ Jesus, this idea of being an adopted child to God is so overwhelming and so precious. You know, orphans would be recognized as being alone, bereaved, often rendered fatherless. The idea in that time described any person who was without legal standing in the covenant community of Israel. They were unprotected and needy and especially exposed to oppression. James is saying, take care of them. Let that be a response from who you are. Not because it's a law you have to do, but because of the overwhelming nature of how God's created you and the transformation you've personally experienced. These people can give nothing in return. James is kind of implying here, the more you know Jesus, the more you act like Jesus. The more God in, the more God out. That's a natural reflection on who we are. James is saying worshipping or religion is pointless unless it corresponds with the mind and the will of God. It should be a reflection of what's inside because of what we have received. You know, when I think about the word orphan and I think about the kids that we get to serve through Kids Hope and the stories that I've heard even today of the needs that they've got, I can't help but think that in today's society, they're the kids that James would be pointing to. Take care of the widows and orphans, church, followers of Jesus. They need you. For no other reason to serve and love because of a response to your love for God. These orphans are alone, bereaved, fatherless, unprotected, exposed to oppression, without earthly parents. We see these orphan attributes everywhere. Now more than ever. Things like parental screen addiction. These things are wonderful, but they're terrible at the same time. We've got a society where many parents just haven't been taught how to parent their kids. The effects of social media. The effects of screen time on the development of children. Do you know that there's actually children who are getting screens too young? They're not developing peripheral vision. They're only able to do that. They literally can't see that way because their whole brain has been created or focused on this particular thing. We've got children who don't know how to have a conversation with an adult. Not because they're rude, not because they're naughty. They've just never learnt that skill. The overwhelming rise in mental health disorders in children is unbelievable. What kids have to contend with today is far more complex than what I ever had to go through. And I'm confident those kids facing vulnerability today would be well and truly in the pocket of the person that James is talking to. And that's what Kids Hope does. Right across the country, we connect a mentor with a child to spend an hour a week just hanging out. I don't have to explain that because that's what we've heard all about this morning. You know, right now, I think I mentioned 76 schools are wanting the Kids Hope program. If you're a person of prayer, please pray for us. We need to find churches who'll say, we'll help. We'll help. We're in. Time and time again, 8 schools in 3 weeks just reaching out to us. Can we have help? We've got a child in need. We're getting more and more calls from the wellbeing agencies. We heard of Kids Hope Mentoring. We've got this child who desperately needs someone to support them. Can you help? You know, across Australia, there's 5,664 government primary schools and about 13,000 churches. The maths should math pretty easily. We just have to get the churches to say yes. If we don't achieve this, thousands of kids will not have experienced the life-transforming relationship of a mentor. 1 hour a week doesn't feel like a lot, but it really, really is. And to Linda's point, I too would look at my children and go, how often did I actually spend just an hour hanging out? Just with them. Not nearly enough. You know, my very first week, my sister said to me, hey, Simon, we had a Kids Hope session on Sunday. Would you kind of like, how about you watch it because it might help your new job? And I thought, oh, great, I'm starting a new job tomorrow. How about I check out their video? There was a person who wouldn't claim any kind of faith, invited herself to their church pulpit like this, and in front of about 300 or 400 people shared the value of the relationship between that school and that church. She couldn't invite enough people to come and serve and walk alongside. The very next day, we received an email from a parent just saying, look, my child's life has been transformed. I don't know how to get in touch with this mentor, but is there a way you can send them my thanks? There's a guy called David who's been mentoring since day one, like 22 years or so, and he's also he's still a coordinator, and he shares the story of his very first little mentor girl. So I think she was about 6 years old when they started walking together. For 2 terms, she would not speak. 2 terms. Week after week, he just kept turning up. turning up, and he starts to question himself, am I freaking this poor child out? Am I the weird old guy that comes in and just wants to spend time reading a book or doing whatever it might be? How do I break through to this girl? Because she's obviously just so caught up in herself. She's so shy. She just can't talk. And he was just praying about it through between the second and third term. And he just got this sense of this, you know, the old ABC cards. You know, if for anyone who's under the age of 20, the ABC cards are these the cardboard things that you'd have like letters on. And you just, you know, nowadays you use other things. But he got these ABC cards out. And he sat with this little girl and he just started flipping them up. What's this letter? And she said, A. And he went, she talked. What does A stand for? And she goes, apple. Well done. What's this letter? B. What does B stand for? Banana. And they went through the alphabet. C, D, E, F. Got to I. What's this letter? And the little girl goes, I. And what does I stand for? I love you. He tells that story 20 years later, bawling his eyes out. That little girl went from the girl who wouldn't talk to the one who wouldn't shut up. The principal said to him, I don't know what you've done. Maybe can you dial it down a little bit? But she'd be in her mid-20s now. 26, 27 years old. Does she have her own family? Maybe. There's another story from a lady called Dory, this beautiful older Dutch woman, only retired last year. She'd be pushing 90 now. And she told me the story of this little girl, boy, I can't remember, but the teacher said to them, hey, can you teach them how to cook? She goes, of course I can teach them how to cook, I'm Dutch. Why do you want me to teach them how to cook? Well, they come to school with a Mars bar for lunch. And if they're lucky, they might get Macca's from Dad for dinner. So Dory started teaching this child to cook. Started with toast and Vegemite, toast and cheese. Over time, graduated to chicken fried rice. This child went away to visit the grandparents over the school holidays and couldn't wait to see Dory next term. Dory, guess what? What? What is it? Oh, gee, I wish I could do a Dutch accent right now because it's so stronger. Dory goes, the child says, I got to make chicken fried rice for my grandparents and my uncle. And they loved it. This child, because a mentor chose to come in, now knows how to cook. I wonder if they're making chicken fried rice for their kids today. Remembering Dory. The stories are unbelievable and we've got thousands of them. But why is it important to me? At Kids Hope we talk about what's your why. Well, here's a picture of me when I was in grade 2. Yes, I was cute. Yes, things have changed. That was me in grade 2. Semi-happy kid. You probably wouldn't have thought too much about me and my situation, but what you wouldn't have seen behind that kind of forced smile is a kid who was hurting. You see, when I was 4 years old, my dad decided that he was going to have an affair and leave my family for the other woman. Mum couldn't afford to stay in the house that we're in, so we had to move house. But that also meant we had to move locations. It meant I had to leave my school and try and find a new community. The teachers at the new school thought the best thing to do would be get Simon to come in, say, the last 2 years, 2 weeks of grade one, so I can get to know the school and the community and hopefully find a few friends to start in grade 2. Well, this girl bullied me relentlessly, and she was a teacher's kid, so it made it really hard to fight back. I was promised that grade 2, she would not be in my class again. First day of grade 2 comes along. We're standing in the lineup outside our classroom, and guess who was there? I bawled. I cried. I was overwhelmed. I was just hyperventilating because I was so scared of this happening all year. And this boy walks up. His name's Lael, and he's walked up and goes, you all right? And I went, yes. He'd just moved to the community as well. His parents had come to our area because they were going to the local Bible college, and unbeknownst to me, my mum and his mum were sitting talking at the gate and Leah was hanging out with me. We became best mates from that day. I went back to his house straight after school and his dad, Rodney, just included me as part of their family. He would kick me up the backside when I needed it. He would love me when I needed it. He would tell me off if it was necessary. And he wasn't particularly doing anything that he thought was anything special. But he cared for me. He supported me. I still remember we went to a church service because they were doing Bible college, and we did like the story of the Good Samaritan, you know, and Rodney was the Good Samaritan and the donkey in one somehow. And I was the guy who got beaten up. And I got a feeling his kids enjoyed that journey pretty well, making sure I was beaten up. But I still remember Rodney grabbing me, throwing me over his shoulder and galloping me around the auditorium of the church. And I remember every time he galloped, I was winded because of his shoulder. And it was the best moment in my life. This guy just cared. When I was 10, my father passed away, which was unexpected. And then the year later, my stepmother was murdered. I had a stepfather through my teenage years who, let's just say, was a product of his own brokenness. And I had a trombone teacher in high school, Viv. And I remember going to my trombone lessons, and she'd just let me debrief. I'd download, blah, 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 blah. And occasionally she'd go, "Do you think we should pick up the trombone now?" I've been able to share with her as an adult what it means to me to have had her in those times. Rodney, my friend's dad, my kids call him Papa Rodney. We're still in touch. They live in Tassie now. The life-transforming encounter that can happen from someone who cares. Let me show you the photo of my family again. I'm blessed to have the family that I've got. We've got great relationships. The kids all love each other. We enjoy doing life together. Constantly getting phone calls. "Dad, can I ask your opinion? What do you think about this?" I'm blessed to have a beautiful relationship, and I can promise you that may not have happened if it wasn't for good people in my life. I'll add to that a praying mum, because mum went through a lot. But I can safely say that I have every excuse to be a drug addict under a bridge based on the journey that I went through. But to have had good people in my life loving me, caring for me, mentoring me makes all the difference. James 1, 26 and 27. "Those who consider themselves religious and do not keep a tight rein on their tongue deceive themselves, and their religion is worthless. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after the orphans and the widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world." That's what we get to do. And can I encourage you today? You're part of a bigger movement. This church, 20 years in the making, serving the local primary school, has been stunning. 70 plus children, over 30 mentors, countless lives transformed. Is so significant, and you're part of a national movement that we call the Kids Hope Village. You know, you've heard the story, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, we think it takes a village to serve and support kids facing vulnerability. And together, we're building this amazing movement across the country where you're not just part of this one little church, you're part of a national movement that's loving the community, that's serving the needy, that's caring for those who may not have someone else to care for. So from me to you, thank you. Thank you for everything that you've done, and thank you for what you're continuing to do. May I pray for you, please? Lord Jesus, what a privilege. What a privilege it is that we get to serve you. Father, I thank you, and I want to honour and bless this amazing community. Their decades worth of service to you and to Clayton North Primary School. We thank you for all those that have mentored, all those that are mentoring, and all those that are yet to mentor. Thank you for the life transformation that can come from 1 hour with one child once a week. I pray you bless them, you hold them, you honour them and keep them. In Jesus' wonderful name, amen. Thank you.